The first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackedSidewalks.com.
Welcome to a shocking victory edition of Scrambled Eggs, everyone. Your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on Crack Sidewalks. Joe McCann and Phil Bush here with you. Phil, boy, I am still stunned at what I saw on Saturday night.
Yeah, there were some angry tweets I had in the locked and loaded, and seemingly I had to take them all back with like 3 minutes to go in the game and never saw it coming.
Yeah, in today's show, we're going to react to the Creighton game. At the time of recording this, we don't know Marcus Howard's diagnosis, so we're just going to kind of give our best guess as to what that may or may not mean for Marquette's future, because we don't know how bad that is. And I guess we'll look forward to the rest of the way, and has our opinion changed on Marquette and its hopes for the rest of the season. But first, Phil, let's just start with I just want to start with this. Maybe some folks may be tuning in expecting to hear a lot of "I was wrong about this team," but in a way, I think we were kind of right. Like, I didn't think they would win against Creighton, but I think some of the changes that happened, granted some of them were forced by Marcus Howard going out of the game, kind of validated what we've been saying for a few weeks, didn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I think we need to talk about the changes in of themselves, but it really kind of, you almost get a secondary level of anger. Like, I'm subtly angry, even though that was a tremendous win, because it's like, why did it take Marcus, Marcus Howard breaking his back for Wojo to make some changes that seemingly, again, in a very small one game sample size, seemingly impacted the game in a positive, very positive way, and were exactly the type of things we were calling for.
Yeah, like, so I hate that it had to happen like that. Like, at the time we're recording this, we don't know exactly how bad Marcus Howard's injury is, but I hate that it took Marcus Howard going out of the game for Wojo to kind of give up on the man-to-man thing and try his own. But I mean, in that first half, you know, I think everyone was kind of jumping ship on the team, saying, yeah, this is about as bad as it gets, even though Creighton was favored anyway, but the defense is just getting beat over and over again. Even the broadcast team was saying, yeah, they're just getting beat on switches over and over again. Creighton's just has recognized it and is continuing to force them to switch, continuing to get baskets. And I think the Crack Sidewalks team handle tweeted out the win probability from that game, and it was like dang near zero at halftime.
Yeah, there was just before halftime, it was 3.5%.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people, some people tuned it off, some people went and saw Black Panther, and a lot of people, understandably, gave up on the game, and then the rally of the season happened. I think, I was listening to Wojo's post-game comments this afternoon, and he said, yeah, like, we went to the zone because what we were doing wasn't working. We wanted to try something new, but also because Elliott and Rousey were in foul trouble and they kind of wanted to protect them. So that's kind of one reason they went to it. But, you know, I'll still give Wojo credit for it. I mean, to finally, you know, I know he hates zone defense as much as he hates anything, but to just swallow his pride for a minute and say, look, let's just do something else and try it and see how it worked. And then he stuck with it the entire half once he saw how it turned the game around. It was a hell of an adjustment. Overdue, maybe, but you got to give him credit for trying something new and seeing that it worked.
Yeah, I give him credit for that. But like I said, I think I'm almost more frustrated because he was literally backed into a corner. He had no other choices. Like, I think, as sad as it is to say, I think if he had literally any other choices, he would have made those choices. Even with Elliott and Rousey in foul trouble, I think he would have still tried to continue. If Howard stayed healthy, he would have continued to try and play them together, and probably would have played man. I mean, We saw it in the first half with when Howard was healthy. We were switching ones and fives. We had our center guarding ball handlers. What insanity is that? Like I just
we've seen that. Yeah,
I don't.
We've seen that repeatedly though, and that's the maddening thing about it. But and yeah, they did it for the entire first half, and like probably for the last. I don't know what when did I forget when Howard went out exactly, but for like the last 4 minutes of the first half, I mean, it just looked like the life had been sucked out of the team. It's like, all right, we're done here. Like,
right, we're shut it down. Fire up the jet. We're heading home.
Yeah, like don't even play the second half. But
which the team does get. I mean, Wojo and the team. While I don't like I said, I actually kind of hold this one against Wojo to a certain extent because you know. They made changes, yes, but only because they were backed into a corner. But I do give them credit because Wojo did rally the team, or the team rallied itself, or whatever, some combination thereof. The team stepped up in a big way and basically saved the season, right? I mean, they're not out of the woods by any stretch of the imagination, but they're certainly – that was probably the biggest hurdle on the road to a five-game sweep to close the season, right?
Yeah, I will say that. You know, I still think, you know, winning out is a steep hill to climb, especially if they're going to have to do it without Marcus Howard. But you're right. Of the five games, that was the toughest at Creighton, for sure. Because I mean, you got the three teams behind you in the standings the next three games. Granted, St. John's is playing much better, but you still get them at home. And then you get the perceived two worst teams of the conference. Although Georgetown is playing a little – I was afraid, you know, looking at the standings that, you know, had Marquette lost against Creighton like they were going to, that I would be having to go to work on Monday and face my Georgetown-loving buddy and hear him, you know, ask me what the standings were and point out that Georgetown and Marquette were tied. So fortunately that will be delayed at least in another game or two before that has to happen. So I didn't want to be tied with Georgetown. But you're going to be facing all the teams behind you. Then you get Creighton at home. So, yeah. Again, I still think it's a steep hill to climb to get to 9-9 in the league, but the fact that they were able to rally, that while they were punched in the gut in the first half, whatever they told themselves in the locker room at halftime, definitely they came out swinging and with a new attitude, and they got more and more confidence with each stop that zone got in the second half. And we could pick out individual performances all day here on the podcast. We'll have to pick out a few for sure. But I thought, you know, every guy who was on the floor played his role brilliantly. And yeah, they got the win. So you just got to give kudos to the whole team, especially Wojo, the coaching staff, making some adjustments and making sure the guys didn't quit in that game. And, like, realize, hey, look, guys, if we quit, our season is definitely done. So let's at least go out fighting and try something different. And they did, and they got it done. And, yeah, a lot of guys stepped up on an individual level too.
Right. Well, and I think the other thing that's nice is I don't want to call – I don't want to discount the effort of the team or the way they played in the second half. But we did finally get breaks going our way from in terms of a pure lucky basketball sense. The 2-3 zone was not impenetrable, right? I mean, there were easy – I shouldn't say easy because they didn't make them. But there were, you know, reasonable jump shots, mid-range jump shots to be had at the – you know, at the free throw line or elbow extended that Creighton just missed, right? They weren't contested shots, but they missed them, and then Marquette
hustled to get the rebound. Yeah, that 2-3 zone was not like, you know, peak Syracuse 2-3 zone,
right,
where like it just shut. But I think if anything, more than anything else, it just caught Creighton off guard, and I don't think they expected it. I thought they probably came out of the locker room thinking, all right, let's just keep pick and roll all day. And we're just going to keep dumping it into our big guys or having our guards blow past whatever big guy switches on them, and we're just going to, you know, blow them out by, you know, 30 or 40 here today. And then Marquette switched to his zone, and I think it really threw him for a loop. And I guess Creighton mentally didn't recover in time to get the win. So, well, yeah, I agree. Like, it's not that the zone was good, but it was better than what we were doing,
and the team got confidence from it. It wasn't bad defense. It was fine defense. Well, I think the other thing that helps contribute, and again, maybe I'm giving too much credit to Wojo in this, or making excuses for the lack of the switching to a 2-3 zone consistently, but I think whereas you know, in the St. John's game, they tried to go to 2-3 a couple of times and it just didn't stick. I think that one of the differences here was the offense in the second half, even without Marcus Howard, was consistent in terms of getting buckets, which meant the Marquette could get back and set up the 2-3. I mean, even I went and watched the last 8 minutes of game time again this afternoon. And the one time where Marquette had to go man to man on an inbounds play, against Creighton in admittedly their own defensive half, Creighton just inbounded the ball and 3 seconds later, the ball was in the hoop and, you know, and everyone's kind of going, well, what happened? Right. So, you know, the fact that the offense was consistent enough to get buckets, not give up long rebounds, not turn the ball over, was I think in part what helped the defense play, you know, be better. They were a set defense as opposed to a scrambling defense, with too many turnovers and or, you know, bad shots leading to runouts.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. The offense was, I mean, the offense was pretty efficient. I mean, they did a nice job. I think, you know, there are definitely a couple guys who can pick out, but I think you have to start with Rousey because he, you know, had to be the one guard. Something we've been wanting to see for a while is just one small guard with everyone else around him. Now, granted, again, they were kind of forced into that with Howard being injured, but he played the role, and he played it very under control. He didn't turn the ball over. I think he only had one turnover in the game, something like 8 assists. So he wasn't forcing shots, which, you know, he has been known to do from time to time. I thought most of the shots Rousey took were very good looks, and then he spent the rest of the half creating for others, especially guys like Sakar. Sakar had an outstanding game. So that's where I kind of want to start is with Rousey's play, and his leadership, I guess, in the second half was as critical as anything else.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, he played under control and with the exception of a couple of times, didn't really go hero ball. And maybe it was a case of the fact that, you know, that Creighton was kind of out to such a commanding lead that everyone kind of went, all right, well, we're not going to get back in this anyway. So let's just try this and see what happens. Right. And it kind of worked because the defense got stops. But yeah, I mean, Rousey just played right within himself and let the game come to him. I also think, you know, a little bit of his foul trouble and the fact that he was the only point guard, really, it kind of forced him to, I don't want to say conserve energy, but, you know, it forced him to be a little bit more deliberate in terms of where he attacked the basket and where he was running around on a bunch of screens and stuff, facilitating the offense through himself. He kind of had to throttle back a little bit just to make sure he had enough gas to go the whole second half.
Mm-hmm. You know, going in the zone, plus he didn't have to, I guess, overextend himself too much defensively.
Yep.
And again, yeah, he had to maybe play a little cautious as well because he had the foul situation. Because Wojo definitely didn't want to be in a situation where Rousey fouled out and he had to go with Elliott as his point guard for the rest of the game. But so, yeah, I think he played under control. He played smart, and that was just a real key. So you know, you got to give Rousey credit. I know maybe we're hard on him sometimes, but he played great in that game, and a time when Marquette absolutely desperately needed him, and they may need him to do the same for 4 more games. Before we talk about the rest of the way, I definitely want to talk about the contributions of Sakar Anum, who I'm calling the Grand Master, by the way. I don't know if that's a nickname that will catch on. I got the idea from Thor Ragnarok. Have you seen that one, Phil?
I have not. That I missed that one, and I'm waiting to get back in on it. But it's the Jeff Goldblum character, right?
Yes. Well, you know, the planet that Thor landed on in that movie was Sakaar. I think it's spelled differently, but that was the name of the planet, and uh-huh. That's where the Grandmaster was.
Okay. Well, good.
So that's where it came from.
We'll have to keep an eye on it on Twitter.
Yeah, so again, I'm not going to try to force it, but if it catches on, it catches on. Speaking of Marvel stuff, Black Panther, you haven't seen it yet, right?
No, I have not. I have a 2-year-old son. It's going to be a bit.
Okay, that's okay. Spoiler-free review. It's awesome.
Okay.
Just
good.
Terrific.
I'm looking forward to it. But the one thing with Sakaar, and I wanted to mention this during the Rousey discussion, but Sam Hauser is kind of ever present with Marquette, but Sakaar's performance and kind of taking the load off of Rousey, I think helped Rousey play better, right? I think Sakaar stepping up and being a scorer, there was, again, in my review this afternoon, probably from the 5.5 minute mark until about the 3 minute mark in the second half, Sakaar, it was, I think, 5 possessions in a row. Sakaar was the primary scorer and got a bucket every time he, you know, got to the rim or a little jumper or kind of a leaner or whatever. So Sakaar kind of becoming that go-to scorer, at least for this game, I think was in part what helped, it helped Rousey, you know, kind of play within himself, because he didn't feel like he had to do everything between Sakaar and Sam, there was enough scoring potential there that Rousey could look to assist rather than to create for himself.
Yeah, I think that's important that those guys can continue to get Rousey to trust them. You know, that, again, like you said, he doesn't have to feel like he has to shoot 30 times a game to be effective or give the team a chance to win. And the way Sam and especially Sakaar were playing in that game, there was plenty of confidence. Say, look, I can give up the ball and probably create a better opportunity for somebody else. So, and again, Sakaar is at that point where, like, I'm no longer surprised when he gets, like, 15 points or so. Maybe I would have been surprised about a month ago, but, I mean, he is getting more and more confident and becoming that threat to drive to the basket. And, you know, his shooting is improving as well. You know, his free throw shooting could still use some work, so I guess maybe a little trepidation there as far as him driving to the basket, because if he gets fouled, you know, it might not go so well. But the point remains, he is becoming a scorer, a legit scoring threat, a guy who could potentially go off for 20 points on any given night. Not saying he would average 20 points, but he could potentially go for 20 points on any given night. And that's important because, especially if you're going forward without Marcus Howard, you're going to need another scorer in the backcourt alongside Rousey. And if he is going to continue to do that, that's good for the slim hopes they have this year and the bigger picture going forward the next couple of years.
One, I think he's, and I'm comparing him to kind of year one, and I'm not projecting that Sakaar kind of turns into what Jimmy Butler is or became, but this is a similar progression to year one of kind of Jimmy Butler coming out, right? He was a longer kind of a longer, leaner guard, kind of wing player that could generate offense, but was really primarily a ball stopper on defense. And usually, who is the player from Xavier that Butler shut down multiple times in his first year? Do you remember?
Dude, it's on the tip of my tongue. If you had to set it, I'd be able to think of it. But it's like Holloway.
Yes, true Holloway, right?
Yeah. Holloway. There it is. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, so Sakaar, I mean, is kind of playing defense first, and now the offense is coming to him. I don't
Holloway.
Trust him to be
too Holloway.
Yes, that's it. Thank you.
Yeah.
I don't trust Holloway. Sakaar to be a just catch and shoot from three kind of player, but I think he's got the range that if he's got an open look, he should take it, because that helps extend his the defense against him, so he can get more lanes to the bucket. He is the kind of the bright shining light around Wojo and the coaching staff development, right? I mean, he is the one player you look at and say, hey, maybe these guys have it figured out. Maybe they can develop players. And I think he's going to continue to be probably one of the – he and Sam Hauser, I think, are actually going to be the most important players on this team going forward, you know, the rest of this year and next year, I think.
Yeah, you know, and, you know, like you kind of said there, the comparison to Jimmy Butler is an ambitious one. But, like, I can see the parallels that you're kind of going for there, as, you know, Butler came in and really didn't have much offensive game at all. He certainly didn't have much of a jump shot. That definitely came around his second or third year at Marquette. And, you know, Sakaar is slowly starting to come around as a scorer. And, yeah, his offensive game is continuing to develop. And hopefully this can continue. And if he can play at this level, the level we've seen the last couple weeks, for the next few weeks, yeah, Marquette might be kind of interesting down the stretch. And it's going to be really critical next year, because obviously Rousey will be gone and Howard is going to need another scoring option in the backcourt alongside him. And if that is Sakaar, then that's a very good thing. Because, you know, the rest of the lineup's probably going to be big guys looking
right
at the way the roster is shaping up
next year, for sure.
Yeah, so So yes, Sakaar has certainly been a bright spot, and he's going to need to continue to be going forward. Now, again, at the time we're recording this podcast, we don't know the prognosis for Marcus Howard, so I guess we could speculate a little bit. Sometimes no news is good news. Like, if he was definitely out for the year, maybe we would have heard already, but maybe they're still evaluating him, and, you know, sometimes when it comes to broken bones or hairline fractures or whatever, like things like that, you need the swelling to go down before you can actually see it on an x-ray.
Right.
So I have no idea what's wrong with him. Wojo really didn't have much to offer after the game, as, you know, coaches never really do in that case. It's not like they go to the back and see an x-ray or an MRI or something. But I guess we're going to find out Monday or Tuesday. But, Phil, let's assume for now that Marcus Howard will not play this week. What does that do for Marquette this week?
Well, I mean, if the second half is any indication, what it does is it forces Marquette to play maybe their more effective defense in a 2-3 zone, and it forces Wojo to go to a little bit of a shorter bench, play maybe a 6-7 man rotation, and that's about it. I mean, he played Helt, Rousey, Hauser, and Sakaar 30-plus minutes and kind of distributed the rest of the minutes a little bit through for, you know, Elliott and Kane and then less for Froehling and Theo John. But it forces him to basically say, all right, we're going to have to limit the number of possessions. We're going to have to protect our players from foul troubles, especially Rousey. I mean, Rousey may have to play 40 minutes if Howard can't play at all.
Yeah, see, that's obviously a concern, especially, you know, if foul trouble becomes an issue, if the other team has got a good defensive scheme on Rousey and forces him into some bad shots. You know, if we can get what we got from Rousey Saturday the rest of the season, then maybe things could be interesting. But I still think going without Howard for the rest of the regular season is troubling. I think winning all four games seems like way too tall of a task. But again, like on the flip side, if they're going to be forced to go with a one-guard lineup, and if you can get a similar contribution from Rousey for the next four games, maybe Marquette can survive. And if Howard's able to be back in time for the Big East tournament, then hopefully he gets back in the mix, and you can see what you can do from there. But
I think the best case scenario at this point, again, we're not doctors, nor have we stayed at Holiday Inns recently. But the best possible case is that Marcus Howard, especially since he didn't come back at all at that game or come sit on the bench, is that he's got limited minutes. I'm willing to bet he misses the St. John's game altogether. But even if he were available for the St. John's game, it's going to be limited minutes. But again, I think that that forces Wojo into kind of the position that we want him to be in, playing a single guard at a time, playing a little more 2-3, playing a little more deliberate. So it's not a good thing by any stretch of the imagination, but maybe it's kind of what forces the team to do the things it needs to do and kind of rally around the, hey, we're kind of behind the eight ball here. We're without Marcus. Let's all collectively step up and improve. I mean, St. John's has been on a tear, but, you know, they also lost like 11 games in a row. So it's not like there's some unbeatable foe that no one's ever defeated before. Right. I mean, so it's possible, but it's going to be tough without Marcus, to be sure.
Yeah. I hope they can figure out something to do with Pons this week, you know, with or without
something
Howard.
Something different, and it better not be switching everything. If I see Hauser on Pons even once on Wednesday, I may storm out of the Bradley Center.
Yeah. St. John's has won 4 in a row, though. But you got to think, granted, the last one was DePaul by 1. But
right.
You got to think the Magic's got to run out sooner or later. But, again, maybe they'll try zone. But maybe if St. John's picks that apart, would box and one be an option on Pons? I don't know who the one would be that you put on him.
Probably Sakaar.
That would be Sakaar. Sakaar, I would guess, probably. Or maybe Greg Elliott at times. I wouldn't hate them trying it. I don't have no idea what, if that would work out or not.
Yeah,
but
my only concern would be is if we get, I mean, if we go too fancy defenses, would this team, you know, have enough time to learn it and know it and be able to execute it?
Yeah, it's probably asking a lot, but I'm just trying to throw out something other than switching bigs onto pawns.
Right. Oh, God. Anything but switching bigs onto pawns. Like, that should just be something that Wojo gives up for Lent.
Yeah, let's give up that for Lent. That would be outstanding.
That would be amazing. Like, listen, if we have to go under a screen and someone pops a three, I will absolutely live with that. Because what I don't want to see is a clear out where Hauser is bailing out with pawns going, just licking his chops going, I could take a three, I could drive it, I could sit here for another 6 minutes. I basically own this situation. You know, I don't want that.
Yeah.
Whatever gets us away from
that. It
was
just way too – let's see if we can just keep pawns under 40 at the Bradley Center.
Well,
keep them under 40.
Last time, that's ambitious because last time you wanted us to keep them under 45 and we did. So,
yeah, exactly. Kale held them to 44. So, I'm upping the ante this time, under 40.
Wow.
But that's the goal for pawns at the Bradley Center. But
that's tough. Well, and it is Al's night. I just, you know, you've got Marquette night. You've got, you know, you've got the senior day. But Al's night is always my favorite of the kind of the Marquette special days. And I'm hoping that that magic or that juice carries the team to success against St. John's.
You know, this has been suggested on Twitter a few times before by other people. I would love for on Al's night for the big thing would be for Marquette to bust out a throwback jersey from the Al McGuire era.
That would be awesome.
And just wear one of those classic jerseys. Could be any one of them, like any one of those crazy ones that they wore in the 70s.
For the record, the gift shop has like ridiculously awesome Bumblebee basketball shorts, like replicas of the original Bumblebee shorts, and they are amazing. I think that uniform's outlawed for some reason, but still, I would love to see throwback Al-based jerseys.
Yeah, whether it's the Bumblebees or, you know, the ones from, you know, the Untucks or you know, the ones that looked very similar to the previous version of our jerseys, like that had the checkerboard on the side, that had the
right, yep.
The gold mark, the powder blue with the gold Marquette kind of at an angle across the front. The George Thompson era jerseys would be cool. I think that would be something that the fans would really get excited about every year is, oh, what are they going to wear on Al's night? It's Al's night. What are they going to wear? I want to see what jerseys they're going to wear. And I think it would kind of be a fun thing. But, you know, that's just me. I like jerseys. But more importantly for the game, I am just real, obviously, whether or not Howard plays is the big thing, but I am curious what kind of starting lineup Wojo would throw out, how the minutes are distributed. I mean, I guess, like, maybe the lineup actually probably isn't that hard to figure out if Howard's out.
I mean, it's
Rousey, it's Elliott, it's Sakar, and it's Sam, and it's Matt Helt. I mean, that's the starting lineup.
Right.
The real question is, if Howard is healthy, again, we have no idea at the time we're recording this, but let's just say Howard, does come back this season. How would you, like, what kind of lineup would you look at? How would you shake up? Would you go back to starting them both, Phil? Or what kind of lineup do you think Marquette would roll with if Howard does return this season?
Well, I think if Howard returns, again, they're going to have to ease him back in. So they're going to have to limit his minutes. And this is selfishly because this is what I would have wanted Wojo to do all along. And I even, you know, tweeted rules or guidelines about it. But I think they've got to figure out, even if Howard's at full health, so be it. But I still think they got to find a way that basically they split Howard and Rousey and play them so that they're only actually playing together 10 minutes or less. There is no way you can play those two together at the same time. And I think if you do that, one of the byproducts of that will be we may actually see good Rousey and good Howard at the same game, right? Like we won't, you know, it's almost like when they play together extended minutes, they're just taking the ball from each other and neither one, you know, only one of them can seemingly get enough steam to be able to be the good version of themselves and the other one kind of suffers. So if you can kind of basically play them opposite of each other, I think that's the way to go.
Yeah, and I think that's a thing, kind of like playing zone defense. Wojo may die a little inside at the idea of splitting up his two-star guards. But also, like the 2-3 zone, maybe you try it and maybe you like it.
Right.
And maybe it works out better.
Well, and that may be Wojo's rotation. That may be Wojo's biggest flaw, is he just may be too damn stubborn. You know, because I don't know how you look at the game tape from the second half of that Creighton game and go, yeah, still don't like it. Pretty going to go back to man-to-man.
Yeah, exactly. And again, who knows? We may just look back at that and say it was just a change of pace thing that caught Creighton off guard, and maybe it still isn't a great thing. But there is no disputing that it worked, and it changed the game around, going to a 2-3 and then just having one small guard out there for the entire second half. Will that translate to four more wins? I don't know. Again, it's asking a lot. You don't know. Who knows what you're getting from Rousey on any given night, and if you never get Howard back, maybe you just don't have enough offense to get you to the end of the season. But again, Phil, you know, we getting kind of shifted to some bracketology talk. While I still don't know if I would bet on Marquette getting back into the bubble contention, as you said earlier, the fact that the biggest hurdle is out of the way, there is at least a sliver of hope for this team. And, you know, it certainly depends on getting these next three games in a row, and then it may come down to a, you know, the final home date with Creighton. But, you know, it's crazy how one game can kind of change your perspective on things, and then you start getting optimistic here and optimistic there. And now you look at it and say, all right, well, we are playing the bottom three teams in the conference, and, you know, the toughest one might be at home. Maybe there is an opportunity here for Marquette to get back into the bubble conversation if they can continue to take the good momentum from that second half of that Creighton game.
Yeah, I think, I don't know. It's gonna depend on Howard, obviously, but I do think having that St. John's game at home, like the first game following Howard's injury, having it at home again against a crowd that should be fired up and you know, at least engaged after that Creighton win, I think there's a lot of holy crow. Maybe we jumped off the wagon a little too soon. You know, I think they have a good shot of winning both games, because I mean, let's be honest, DePaul is still DePaul even on the road. I wouldn't be shocked at a much closer game than last time, but by the same token, I do think Marquette can beat DePaul comfortably even without Howard in the game. It all comes down to this St. John's game and how they respond to Shamari Pons and what they decide to do should Howard not be playing.
Yeah, the important thing is if whatever happens in the first half is a disaster, that they switch it again. I don't know.
Right.
Just whatever it is. If they do the 2-3 zone and it doesn't work, well, you got to change it. If they do the man-to-man and it's a disaster again, you got to change it. If they go way outside the box and try a box in one or something crazy like that and it doesn't work, well, you got to change it. But so we'll see, like, if there's any adjustments that can be made. I brought up bracket matrix as you were talking, and as we're recording this on Sunday night, out of 50 brackets, Marquette is on 2.
So we doubled our bracket from last year. Or from last
on week. Half the number of brackets, because at this time last week there were 106 brackets out and Marquette was on one of them. So right now there are 50 brackets out, and I guess everyone else is updating at the moment.
So we quadrupled our odds.
Yeah, so moving on up. Marquette is, as far as, like, points they've received, I guess they tally number of points and seeds. Marquette is right now the 9th team out. So pretty far back there, yet maybe not totally impossible if you win out. You know, my opinion has long been that wins against St. John's, Georgetown, and DePaul aren't going to move the needle. Like, maybe you might slip past a couple teams that have bad losses, and teams are going to have bad losses. But, you know, even if you're get into that last four in, that's still basically out to me, because as bids disappear during championship week, you're just not going to be safe there. So I'm still of the opinion that you need that magic number of 11, some combination of regular season wins and Big East tournament wins. So if you can win out and get to 10 Big East wins, well, that's something, and I think you're interesting. And who knows, you know, if Seton Hall continues to kind of tread water there, Marquette could maybe move into a tie for 6th and may not have to play that first game in that 7-8-9-10 game in the Big East tournament, which would be a nice bonus.
Yeah, that would be a nice bonus and kind of get Marquette you know, comfort. Because I think whether it's fair or makes sense or not, I think basically everyone's kind of saying, we're going to take the top six teams out of the Big East, and then we'll see where it kind of goes from there. Maybe if there's room, we'd take a seventh. So I think if we can get to that sixth position, just psychologically within the mindset of the committee, I think finishing sixth in the Big East would have some sort of impact. Or maybe I'm making that up. But
yeah, it's my understanding that conference record and conference standings are really never taken into account. It's just the body of work. You know, the big buzzword right now is quadrant one wins and quadrant two wins. That's what they're kind of looking at this year as far as the wins in different quadrants. So winning at Creighton was a quadrant one win. So, you know, that was something nice to have. That's, I guess, I don't know if Seton Hall was or not. I guess winning at Seton Hall
on the road probably was.
Yeah. So, and they don't have a chance for another quadrant one win the rest of the way. I don't believe I don't know if that KenPom breaks it down as A and B, which is probably not the same because KenPom is using its own.
It's not the same. So you've got to be top 50, a top 25 home or away is quadrant one. Top 50 away is also quadrant one or something to that effect. So Marquette right now has – I'm looking at their – so as of the 17th when this was last updated, we were 4-8 in quadrant one, 3-3 in quadrant two, 2-0 in quadrant three, and 6-0 in quadrant four. So with the exception –
Wisconsin's probably quadrant four, am I right?
The committee was deciding to make a quadrant five section, and it was going to be all teams that were beat by their so-called not rival at home, who then later stormed the court when they beat a team ranked sixth in the country.
How about Wisconsin beating Purdue last week? That's got to be the most shocking result of the entire season.
Correct. And even worse was that they stormed the court. Come on.
But we digress. But yeah, Creighton at home, would that qualify quadrant one or quadrant two?
Quadrant one is a top 30 home, neutral top 50, away top 75. So Creighton right now is 33, again, as of the 17th, which was yesterday. But they don't have. Don't have the Creighton. Oh, they do. They do. This is updated. So I'm looking at the NCAA team sheets, which is what the committee uses in the selection process this year. So they've got the Creighton. It's updated with the Creighton win. So that is a quadrant one win. But if their ranking holds as 33, they would. If we beat them at home, they would be a quadrant two win, not a quadrant one.
I see.
Now, that could change if Creighton goes and wins. Like, if they beat Villanova, you know, their kind of KenPom ranking would move them up higher, so they could become a quadrant one. It's unlikely, but they could become a quadrant one win if Marquette beats them at home.
Not to get too off topic, but did you catch any of the Xavier-Villanova matchup this weekend?
I did not. I missed it.
It was a damn good game. I am just so impressed with Villanova every time I watch them. I know they get a bit of a skid there, but they're getting their guys back. Phil Booth is going to be back. I think when the bracket comes out, they're probably still going to be the team I have winning the whole thing. But
I agree. Well, and how crazy is it that – and we've talked about the Big East, but Xavier and Nova are likely number one seeds.
Yeah, as things are shaping up now, because they don't play each other again unless it's going to be in the Big East Championship. And if that happens, I don't think you discredit either one of them for losing in the Big East Championship game. But I think, you know, let's look at the rest of Villanova's schedule and look at the rest of Xavier's schedule. But I think there's certainly a good chance that they both win out. And if they both do, then I would expect both Villanova and Xavier. See, Villanova's got DePaul at home, Creighton, Seton Hall, Georgetown. I would say at Creighton would be the only game I'd be nervous about if I'm Villanova. And then Xavier's – I think Xavier actually is Xavier doesn't have, let's see, Xavier's last few, I think Xavier only has three games left in the Big East, because I think they're, yeah, they've got Georgetown, Providence, DePaul, and Providence is at home. So I would be stunned if Xavier doesn't win out. Georgetown away, Providence at home. So yeah, I think that would be certainly great for the Big East, but also pressure's on because you better at least get to the Elite Eight if you've got two number one seeds.
Yeah. Otherwise, all the stories about how the Big East is overrated write themselves. But just to wrap up the quadrant thing really quick, doing some quick mind math. So St. John's right now is 70 in the RPI. So actually, again, the St. John's loss at St. John's was a quadrant one loss. So in the grand scheme of things, while a bad loss, in the statistical model, it was actually not a bad loss. But so if their RPI holds and they stay at 70, that means a win against them at home would be another quadrant two. DePaul is garbage. So they're 181. I'm not holding back on that one.
You never should.
Right. So if we beat DePaul on the road, that would be another quadrant three win. And then Georgetown is currently 128. So on the road, if we beat Georgetown, that would be a quadrant two win. And then Creighton at home, again, if they hold at 33, that would be another quadrant two win. So Marquette could conceivably get three more quadrant twos and a quadrant three win, potentially even a quadrant one, you know, depending on where Creighton goes from an RPI standpoint. So, I mean, again, even if they don't win out, like if they, as long as they don't lose the DePaul game, if they win three out of four down the road, I still contend that they're in okay shape to win an at-large bid. It's not a guarantee by any stretch of the imagination. A win out guarantees them. I would go on record as saying if they win the last four games, they're in no matter what. But if they win three out of the four and the loss is not against DePaul, I think we're still in decent shape.
Yeah, maybe so. Yeah, I'm warming up to the idea of an at-large bid being back on the table. I would like to see how things go this week.
Well, I'd like us
to
win more than one in a row.
I would like also to know Marcus Howard's health.
Yes.
Before I get too excited. But again, the Creighton win just changes your perspective a little bit. Maybe there will be adjustments made. Maybe they're willing to try a few different things on defense. Maybe Wojo is more open to the idea of splitting his two little guards up if he does get the second one back. And maybe that will produce some more positive results. And again, they're playing teams that they should beat. For what it's worth, going game by game, KenPom does have Marquette winning all four of the next four games, although the projected record is still 8-10. So, yeah, you're a 6-point favorite against St. John's, 1-point favorite against DePaul and Georgetown on the road, and Creighton at home. So, basically, it should be one nice win against St. John's and then three nail-biters down the stretch. So get the antacids ready.
Get blood the angry pressure tweets check. and the GIFs ready. It's gonna be a barn burner.
Yeah, it's going to be a tense couple weeks here. But it's not over.
You're telling me there's a chance?
There is still a chance. So we're just going to cling on to that, and we'll see how the next few games go. As far as predictions for the week, Phil, it's hard to predict because we don't know if Marcus Howard's going to play or not, but what is your gut feeling on what's going to happen this week?
My gut feeling is because I'm thinking Marcus Howard's definitely not playing against St. John's, and he's probably not playing against DePaul. I'm guessing he's going to be out at least a week, but that's based on no medical science whatsoever. I think Wojo's going to be backed into a corner where he actually has to deploy his best strategy, which is to play the 2-3 in a single small guard. I think it is going to be an awful experience, but I think Marquette wins both games this week.
Screw it, let's be interesting. Two wins.
How crazy is it going to be if Marquette wins both games this week? Like, how nuts is that?
That it would be wild, you know, if you're losing your best player, and all of a sudden you're getting hot and you're going to be back in the bubble conversation. Like, I think, you know, let's say that happens, I would guess they're going to start popping up as a, you know, next four out, or maybe even first four out on some bracketologies a week from now. So they'll be in the conversation, but I think that they'll be moving up, not because they've gotten good wins, but some other teams on the bubble will have had some bad losses, and you're just going to pass them by doing the status quo and just not ruining your chances. Moving the winning out, including a win at Creighton, a season sweep of Creighton, that moves the needle. And right. then I think you're at 10-8, you're in. I would think, but again, it's such a steep hill to climb, and we don't know if they've lost their best player for the season or not. That's the big caveat in all this. I think we may be overlooking a little too much. You know, the excitement of the win and the schedule, maybe we're not talking quite enough about the fact that Marquette did lose. It may have lost its best player for the season. So let's not totally discredit that. And I will say, if news comes out that Marcus Howard is out for the season, I may drop my expectations to 1-1 this week in some fashion, just because, you know, that may rip the team's heart out a little bit. But if there's hope that he's going to return, there may be some excitement. So, all right, dude, let's maintain until Marcus gets back, and then we can make a run with him when he's able to come back on the floor. But I don't think I want to gloss over the fact that Marcus Howard may not play again this year, because you don't get better by losing Marcus Howard.
No, I agree. Now, you know, and there's Bill Simmons, the sports guy, has something called the Ewing theory, where basically certain, and I don't know if you're familiar with it, but, you know, some teams.
Yeah, basically the idea that, yeah, like when you have one great player, that everyone else does less, and so when that guy's gone, everyone else plays a little better,
right?
Because they're not looking to the great player to do as much.
Right, and I don't think Marcus Howard, I don't think, is a fit for the Ewing theory, simply because the actual theory of the crime is if Rousey had gotten hurt instead of Marcus, we would see similar results. Not because, yeah, you know, Rousey or Marcus, are either one of them are bad, but simply because it's the right strategy to not play both of them at the same time. You know, so I think that's really what we see. If the roles were reversed, I think we'd see a similar result, because, again, we've been, you know, clamoring for kind of a one small guard lineup. We finally get it delivered. Again, small sample size, but I'm willing to bet if Marcus doesn't start or play much, if any, in the first half at least of that St. John's game, I'm willing to bet Marquette plays fairly well. I'm guessing at least a couple of point lead going into halftime. I think the wheels may come off simply because Rousey gets tired, or, you know, we have to take Rousey to the bench sometimes, which means Greg or Sakar or somebody else is running the offense. So that's where they may get into trouble, but not, you know, playing a single small guard lineup is the way to win with this team, and we're going to see it, I think.
Yeah, I hope it works out. So, yeah, I'm on the record with two wins, with a little bit of trepidation not knowing Marcus Howard's status. But, again, you're playing teams at the bottom of the conference. Even though St. John's has been hot, you're getting them at home, and then you're playing, by any measure, the worst team in the conference, DePaul. And if you want to be a tournament team, you just got to beat DePaul. Even
Absolutely.
Though it's not the old house of horrors that we're used to, it's still going to see DePaul. But there should be more Marquette fans in attendance than DePaul fans still. So it's kind of like a half home game.
Right, basically. Yeah, it doesn't look like a home game in the quadrants, but it sure feels like one.
All right, so I guess that's a wrap for this week's show. As always, we appreciate you guys listening. Hit us up with your feedback on Twitter. I am Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOOF 23. Crack Sidewalks is his team handle. Leave your comments on cracksidewalks.com, where we post the podcast. Rate, review, subscribe on iTunes. Hit us up on Facebook. We have a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page as well. Phil, any final thoughts before we wrap up this edition?
No, let's all hope Marcus is relatively healthy, and that Wojo decides not to be stubborn and just embraces the 2-3 zone. Just embrace it, Wojo. It'll be fine.
Positive thoughts, everybody. Positive thoughts. Hopefully for two more wins, and we'll see you next week. Seashells and Balloons.